Hello and welcome to Wine Blast, the podcast that brings wine to life with a smile. And this episode is definitely bringing a smile to our faces because it's about one of our all-time favourite wine grapes, isn't it?
It is. We are total Chardonnay superfans. that might not be the coolest thing to admit, but, you know, I think we can live with that. We just love good Chardonnay, don't we? But it does need to be good.
You know, I think it's less uncool to admit to being a Chardonnay groupie now than it was a few years ago, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, like it was when we said it in our 2020 episode about the best white wine grape.
Yeah, that was a fun one, wasn't it?
I think times are changing. You know, styles of Chardonnay are changing, and there are way fewer soupy, sickly Chardonnays that led to the ABC or anything but Chardonnay movement.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's fair enough. And it's also, you know, one of those things we're going to be exploring in this episode, which is all about Chardonnay in New Zealand. Now, this is a category we've been getting more and more excited by lately because the progress in terms of quality, diversity, and I don't know, just sheer deliciousness has been astounding. And what's more, it's come at a time when white Burgundy, you know, the homeland of great Chardonnay, has been in ever shorter supply and prices have been going through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, especially after the 2021 vintage, which we talked about in our Burgundy's Tipping Point episode back in January, where there's very little white wine, especially the top stuff because of the frosts. So this is a subject that's timely and which we've been really keen to dive into. And New Zealand wine growers kindly agreed to sponsor this episode. So we're very grateful to them for helping make it happen. Anyway, here's a quick taster of what's to come.
I'm just going to come out and say it. New Zealand Chardonnay can outclass wines from Burgundy.
Master sommelier Cameron Douglas stirring the pot there. We'll be hearing from him, as well as one of New Zealand's, if not one of the world's finest winemakers, Michael Brajkovic of legendary Kiwi Chardonnay producer Kumu River. We'll also be tasting and recommending a bunch of delicious Kiwi Chardonnays, which we've got here, to showcase why this subject gets us so excited. And amid all these fun and games, something really important to say, I will try valiantly not to mention the white wine emoji tragedy.
What?
This scandal, this massive scandal. Come on. You know, we raised the rallying cry for white wine emoji back in 2020 in that episode about the best white wine grape. Now, I'm sure lots of white people have made similar appeals.
I'm sure they have.
But New Zealand wine growers took it up as part of their White Wine Month campaign back in May last year. White Wine Month because Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Gris and Chardonnay all have days, international days, falling in May. But, you know, the great gods of the Unicode Consortium.
Is that who it is?
Yeah.
They make the big decisions.
They clearly deemed this appeal unworthy. So, you know, a white wine emoji is still not there. It's still not a thing. Neither, for that matter, is a rosé one. What's happening?
This is a
scandal. All wine lovers should be up in arms. We need to get some T-shirts printed. We need to get on the streets. What can I say? So anyway, I will try to put this in the back of my mind during this episode, but just rest assured, it is there.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, what I was about to say was that New Zealand has been in the news quite a bit of late, and not just because of emojis, or Jacinda Ardern unexpectedly resigning, or Kia Ora being added to the English dictionary, the Oxford English Dictionary. Now, what I'm referring to is, of course, the horrendous battering the country took in terms of weather earlier this year, particularly as a result of Cyclone Gabrielle.
Yeah. There's been, I don't know, seemingly no shortage, has there, of natural disasters lately, but the images of torrential rains, catastrophic flooding, bridges destroyed and buildings and cars washed away in February will live long in the memory. Cyclone Gabrielle mainly hit New Zealand's North Island, but it's estimated to have caused about $13.5 billion New Zealand dollars worth of damage. That's about £6.8 billion or $8.5 billion US. At least 10,000 people were displaced and at least 8 people died.
And it struck at the worst possible time for wine folk, just before the harvest.
Yeah.
So North Island wine regions like Hawke's Bay and Gisborne, two regions we're going to be focusing on in this episode, they were some of the worst affected areas. Power and water supplies went down, as did communication. The Esk Valley area in Hawke's Bay was particularly hard hit, not just water damage, but huge quantities of silt submerging vineyards and also wineries with all their equipment and their wine stock.
Yeah, those images of that were just unbelievable, weren't they? Now, we asked both Cameron and Michael when we spoke to them about the aftermath of the cyclone for New Zealand wine. Cameron talked of vintage 2023 getting hammered and how 15% of Hawke's Bay vineyards have either been permanently wiped out or at least put out of production until the vines can recover.
Michael equally said, you know, 2023 had been one of the most difficult vintages he could remember. Though he did add that 1988 with Cyclone Bola was worse. But even so, this year they had 260 millimetres of rain in a 12-hour period. The winery flooded. And he said, in his typical understated fashion, you can't really ripen grapes well under those conditions. You know, he told us they didn't get the ripeness levels they aspire to, and the wines will be a bit lean or zesty, zingy. But okay, you know, he compared it to 2018, which was also difficult, but Cumu did still make their top single vineyard wines. He also said, though, that one of the properties they source grapes from in Hawke's Bay got smashed in the floods, buried under silt, and may not even come back as a vineyard. So it's all pretty frightening stuff.
That's scary stuff, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, goodness me, totally. So the phrase you often hear coming out of New Zealand is that it will be a long road ahead. But New Zealanders are resilient and resourceful people, as we all know. The wine community has really come together, helping each other, you know, in some cases, just digging bottles out of the silt one by one, as we heard from our friend Ollie Stiles, winemaker out there. They've also been fundraising the Hawke's Bay Wine Growers Charitable Trust Relief Fund. That's a very long name, isn't it? But anyway, despite their long name, they've so far raised over 160,000 New Zealand dollars. We're going to put details of how to donate in our show notes.
Now, of course, the worst of it is over now. And the message coming from the New Zealand wine industry is we are open for business. Certainly, Hawke's Bay were keen to stress that very much inviting people to visit the cellar doors. And of course, one other way to support is by simply buying and drinking the wines.
We can get on board with that.
Obviously, at the moment, it's going to be from previous vintages, but then keeping an open mind when it comes to the 2023s, because some people will be able to defy the odds this year and they're going to make really good wines.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I guess at the same time, we should also remember that the South Island, you know, including regions like Marlborough, the engine room of New Zealand wine, and Central Otago and Canterbury, they were sort of largely unaffected, as far as I understand. They certainly weren't as hard hit. But, you know, talking of supporting regions like Hawke's Bay and Gisborne that were affected, Chardonnay is a great way to do this because in both areas, it's the most grown grape variety.
Nice segue, Mr. Richards.
There we go. What about
that? So let's get on to some very quick context. In New Zealand, or Aotearoa, the land of the long white cloud, Sauvignon Blanc reigns supreme, covering 64% of the entire national vineyard. But Chardonnay comes in third after Pinot Noir, accounting for 6% of wine production, albeit only, I think it's 2% of exports.
Yeah, it's a secret that's so good there. They're keeping it to themselves, maybe. I got
Not
a glimpse
good for us.
Into this world when I attended the Chardonnay Symposium in Gisborne a few years back, which was absolutely fascinating, not to mention very enjoyable. But Chardonnay has been steadily growing in production terms. According to Rebecca Gibb, MW, in her book, The Wines of New Zealand, the Chardonnay crush in the mid-1980s was about 2,000 tonnes. By the turn of the millennium, it was 23,500 tonnes, so about a tenfold increase. These days, it's about 30,000 tonnes. It's also worth noting that Chardonnay is produced in quality and quantity, you know, sort of proportionally speaking, in all of New Zealand's wine regions, unlike Sauvignon Blanc, for example, which isn't.
Fair enough. There we go. Yeah. And the main regions for Chardonnay production in terms of quantity are Hawke's Bay, Marlborough and Gisborne. But regions like North Canterbury and Auckland are also well known for making top Chardonnays. These days, New Zealand Chardonnay comes in a whole range of styles, often dependent as much on the producer and their approach or techniques. So it's hard to generalise about regional character. But generally speaking, the further south, the brisker the acidity and tangier the fruit spectrum. So the likes of Marlborough and North Canterbury often show quite steely underlayers, whereas Gisborne or Hawke's Bay can be a bit richer in style. But it does also depend on the producer, you know, when they decide to harvest and then how they make the wine.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's fair to say that New Zealand Chardonnay has gone through a definite evolution in style and quality, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, when we were tasting for the Master of Wine exam, what, about 15 years ago now?
Gosh, is that long ago?
I think so.
15 years.
Oof. You know, our standard spot for New Zealand Chardonnay was slightly, being very honest here, slightly sort of sickly, melony fruit.
Sort of sweet fruit,
wasn't
it?
Very buttery character, allied to sort of a somewhat sour acidity. Now, Warren Gibson of Trinity Hill, very famous Chardonnay maker in New Zealand, termed this the sort of lazy phase of New Zealand Chardonnay, after which winemakers had to unlearn how they've been taught to make Chardonnay and relearn a new sort of paradigm. The result is that these days, New Zealand Chardonnay is a totally different beast. It's so much more elegant in style, you know, and some of the top wines really are rivaling top Burgundy in terms of savoury complexity and sheer vitality.
And proof of that actually came, didn't it, in the seminal Far Vintners tasting of 2014 in London, when the New Zealand Chardonnays of Cumie River from Auckland bested top white Burgundy in a blind tasting, judged by some of the foremost tasters in the world. You know, it's true that Cumie winemaker Michael Brajkovic very modestly attributes some of that victory to their use of screw caps, whereas some of the white Burgundy suffered from dodgy corks. but still, this was a big moment.
It was. So we're going to bring in Michael very shortly. Just before we do, a bit of context is needed. Chardonnay is often made using oak barrels, which tend to give a distinctive character to the wines. Like anything in wine, it can have both good or bad results depending on how it's done. The malolactic fermentation is particularly important in Chardonnay because it softens the wine's acidity and can generate diacetyl, which gives a buttery or butterscotch character, which is what we mentioned used to be quite a defining character of New Zealand Chardonnay at one stage.
Yeah. I mean, one other character that can be generated during winemaking and particularly relevant to Chardonnay is referred to variously as struck match or flinty or reductive or positive sulfides. Now, these volatile sulfur compounds vary in nature, but they often give a toasty, nutty, sort of fresh curry leaf note. And they are a byproduct of the yeast working on precursors in the juice. Now, in terms of smell and taste, they can polarise people. But we love some of this character in our Chardonnay when it adds to the complexity. We just mention it here because we do explore this intriguing aspect of Chardonnay in the conversation with Michael. And we refer to it in different ways.
Yeah, we're going to come on to it in the
tasting
as well.
So there's just a few winemaking
exactly.
Bits.
I mean, you know, we really need a better way of referring to it, don't we?
To that positive sulfide
character, exactly, because it's not reductive, really. That's a misnomer. And struck match doesn't sound like the most pleasant thing. If you're striking
not particularly,
a match,
no.
Your nose. mineral, you know, minerality is in the mix, but again, that's a term that means so many things.
Yeah, it's not
people.
Specific
so
enough, is
ultimately,
it?
Ultimately, it's just too ambiguous. Flinty comes close, you know, and smoky too.
I think of Puifume when we think flinty, though, and
it's a different, isn't it? Kind of volatile stuff,
but
it's not everything. So it doesn't quite capture the toasty characteristics that can really be part of this sort of character in Chardonnay. So anyway, I've had a think.
That's dangerous. I can see the smoke rising.
Anyway, I'm suggesting a definitely absurd but also quite catchy alternative.
Go on.
Snap, crackle and pop. How about that? There we go. Snap, crackle and pop. That is this character in four words.
Yeah, not bad. Rice Krispies, never a bad frame of reference. It just does make me think a bit of breakfast, though. But anyway, on that bombshell, and in the spirit of moving on, let's bring in Michael Brajkovic, winemaker at Cumie River and leading authority on New Zealand Chardonnay. Cumie is based north of Auckland City, but urban encroachment and rising land prices saw them diversify in 2017 by adding the Rays Road Vineyard in Hawke's Bay to their portfolio. That was just after you went to visit them, wasn't it, in 2016? Mm. Maybe something you said. What did you say?
I deny everything.
I love remember. Ray.
I was fresh off the flight and I didn't know who I was, frankly. But anyway, it was a fascinating visit, which is partly why I wanted to get Michael on here. He's a fellow master of wine and hugely knowledgeable. Also, an absolute master of the understatement. So see if you can spot a few of those in our chats, because there are quite a few. Anyway, I asked him what makes a great Chardonnay.
Well, it's all about the fruit and the balance and the texture and all those things that make any wine great. But Chardonnay has, I won't say it's a unique characteristic, but it does have a lot of those things in spades. So you get those kind of zesty characters, you get fruit characters, but you get at the same time texture, weight, and something that can benefit from bottle age. So all of those things come together over a long period of time and you start to see the building of texture, the mouthfeel increasing, and it starts to take on another aura. And it's a pretty good variety for doing all of those things better than most.
Now, you said to me in the past something, a comment I found intriguing was that some people refer to Chardonnay as a blank canvas. You don't agree with that, do you?
No, I don't. I think particularly with the clonal variations we have now and the site variations, we get some really interesting fruit characters, and they are quite different and unique for each site. There is a continuum of Chardonnay characteristics depending on those site, climate, clonal variations that go from very lean citrus-like characters, you know, lemons and limes, going through to orange, grapefruit peel, and then on to peach and apricot type characters, white flesh peach, yellow flesh peach, apricot, and then getting into melon. So there are a number of different fruit characteristics that I think Chardonnay has and shows very well.
How has New Zealand Chardonnay evolved over the years?
Quite dramatically, I'd say. I mean, when I first started in the industry, it was quite a young variety. My father planted Chardonnay, which they called Pinot Chardonnay in those days, back in the mid-60s, and it was heavily virus-infected and never really got very ripe at all. It was a very difficult grape variety and made quite austere wines. But once we started planting better clones, some virus-free, and on better rootstocks, then we started to see, particularly in the 1980s, better and better Chardonnay fruit coming in. In the early 80s, the trend was to try and preserve the fruit characters by fermenting in stainless steel tanks at quite cold temperatures and making a fruity wine, as fruity as possible, and then aging the wine in barrels to give it a kind of a seasoning of oak. And invariably, those wines just oxidized. They just became quite yellow, quite clumsy, quite oaky, and the extraction of the oak was just overawed any fruit that may have been there. So it wasn't until we started to use the technique of barrel fermentation, where you put the juice into the barrel and actually conduct the fermentation in that oak vessel. The juice doesn't extract a lot of character out of the oak initially, and as the alcohol increases during the fermentation, that extraction of character from the barrels becomes more important, but it's subtle, and it's moderated also by the presence of yeast cells, which then coat the inside of the barrels as well. So it's a much more gentle, balanced, harmonious integration of fruit characters and oak characters. And that was a huge step forward. And it was really only from, you know, learning about how traditional white Burgundy was made that's exactly the way.
I suppose there's one thing using oak barrels. There's another thing making very elegant, textured, nuanced, subtle Chardonnays. Was there still further evolution to come in New Zealand? You talked about the change in the 80s.
Absolutely. The big change that happened viticulturally was just better and better clonal material, better rootstocks in particular. All of that viticultural technical stuff was happening. The evolution of better grapevine training systems, all of that helped to ripen grapes better, to get better characters. And then with our own wines, we started playing with other techniques, such as wild yeast fermentation and malolactic fermentation. I think they are two very, very important characters. You can go over the top with both of them as well. So initially with malolactic fermentation, it was there as a acid-reducing technique. So we were converting malic acid, which is a green, sharp-tasting acid, into lactic acid, much more milky and buttery. And of course, the byproduct of that was the diacetyl, which gave you that buttery note, that dairy product note, which people love to start with. You know, it was a characteristic that really became popular. But as we went further, we realized that the diacetyl was just a mask. And once you remove the diacetyl, which we learned about through long aging on the yeast lees, once you remove the diacetyl, the fruit came back again. All the other characters came back as well. So we then moved away from those very buttery styles and lost a few customers in the course of doing that, because a lot of people still like those really buttery ones. But subtlety is something that we learned as well, that you didn't need to have just overt oak and overt butter. You actually needed to have other things as well.
So we're talking about winemaking, so I'll come back to some of the points you raised there, but let's carry on this theme for the moment. In Chardonnay, we often talk about a sort of flinty or struck match or positive sulfide character. What's your take on that character?
Well, one of the characteristics, or one of the technical things that we like to do, is to incorporate some grape solid material in the fermentation. So we generate the solids by juice extraction. We hand harvest the fruit, but then it has to be turned into juice somehow. So the way we choose to do it is to use whole bunch pressing, which is probably it is the gentlest way, but it still generates grape solids, which then need to be removed somehow. But some of the grape solids are very useful in the fermentation and providing a bit of a backbone to the wine. But the solid material comes from the grapes, and the grapes can have some spray residue, particularly sulfur, elemental sulfur. So if you have a bit of the elemental sulfur going through into the fermentation, you will get these sulfitic characters, the struck match type notes. And a little bit of it is good. It can be very attractive. But as with other things like oak, some people have the attitude that if a little bit of something is good, then a whole lot of it must be great. And I don't necessarily agree with that. And I think it is all about subtlety and balance.
Just flipping it back, we're talking about winemaking. How about terroir? To what extent would you attribute the character and the quality of your Chardonnays to the terroir in which they're made and grown?
Very, very strongly. Our terroir here in Kumeu is clay. So it's pretty heavy clay that can sustain the growth without irrigation. And that's an important factor. And so when we do get dry conditions in January and February and the soil starts to crack, the vine can still find water to survive, but not to flourish. And that's important, that the vegetative growth stops and you start getting ripening. And the same type of thing at the Raised Road Vineyard, where we have limestone. So the limestone does the same type of thing. Like clay, it holds water, but ekes it out very stingily. It's there to allow the vine to survive and then to ripen the fruit properly.
Interesting. Where do you feel New Zealand Chardonnay sit in a global context now, Michael? You know, you've mentioned Burgundy, Australia, California.
I think we're very much along the path of emulating Burgundy, or at least those styles, because our climatically we're much more attuned to that kind of climatic conditions. But it's been a long road, and things are getting better slowly. The interest in Chardonnay currently has never been greater. Obviously, Sauvignon Blanc is still our most important variety, it's more than 75% of production in New Zealand. But Chardonnay has grown. It's grown by 30 or 40% in the last year or so. And there's interest in a number of different styles. So it was really focused around that, I guess, a Côte d'Or, Puligny, Chassagne style of wine with a lot of oak and that type of wine. But now there's a lot more interest in leaner styles, wines with less oak, and also sparkling wine. So I think we're going to see a lot more expansion of Chardonnay production. There's a lot of interest from winemakers. There's a lot of interest in the variety. There's a lot of interest in all the styles and all the techniques that we can use and the different ways we can make the wine. And it's very interesting and a lot of fun too.
It's interesting you talk about the interest in Chardonnay being revived almost. You're in a country dominated by Sauvignon Blanc production, and also in terms of Chardonnay, we've seen the rise of these buttery, rich Chardonnays, which then fell out of favour, and then we had the ABC, anything but Chardonnay movement. But you sense that now it's coming back up, that there's an interest in these more elegant styles.
Yes, and we certainly have seen that in Australia. And you know, Chardonnay's never been better in Australia. There's so many good styles, better ways of doing it, more regions, more diversity. And so these guys are inspirational as well to us, and they like what we're doing too. So there's a lot of interaction between the two countries, and I think we're, you know, ratcheting up the quality accordingly. California's a different story. It's still pretty focused on those larger, more robust wine styles, but there's a lot of interest there as well in making better, leaner, more food-friendly wines in the future.
But you've been Chardonnay specialist for many years now. It must have been a tough furrow to plough at times.
Not really. I think for us, Chardonnay never went away. It was one of those things that's always been very important to us, and it's always been the best wine that we've made since the 80s. So I think we've just been going better and better and getting better along the way. I think in many ways shown a bit of leadership in that as well.
Now, your wines have bested Burgundy in blind tastings. Now that Burgundy is getting ever more expensive, particularly in the 2021 vintage, what do you make of the comparison?
Well, we aspire to make wines as good as they do. And at the best end of things, they are still the best. You know, there's just no doubt about it. But we do show up well occasionally, and it's really gratifying when you go into a blind tasting and you do well. But our aim for any of those tastings has always been to be regarded as being on the same page, but to, you know, sometimes kind of step up above that is very nice.
What's the future for New Zealand Chardonnay, Michael?
Well, I think continuing along the same path, I think we're going to see a lot more tank fermented styles as opposed to barrel, either stainless steel or concrete or larger format barrel. And in barrels, a lot more use of older oak for making wines with texture and with lees aging, but not necessarily with a lot of new oak character. And taking the inspiration from areas like the Mâconnais and like Chablis, where you see great examples of that type of wine made with the Chardonnay grape at affordable prices. At that very top end of Burgundy, I mean, it's great from our point of view that the prices are going up that high, because it leaves a lot more space for us just underneath. And that's been very successful for us. And I think we'll continue to make those styles, but a lot more of what we're producing, particularly off the Rose Road Vineyard, will be in those more, well, less oak influenced, much more lees aging, reductive, flinty characters, if you like, but very zesty, very food friendly, wines that go particularly well with seafood. And I mean, in New Zealand, does seafood as good as anywhere. And Sauvignon Blanc has shown how good it can be with that. But I think Chardonnay made in that slightly leaner style can beat it.
That all sounds absolutely delicious. Michael, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure. Thanks, Ben.
Freshness, food friendliness. That is music to my ears. But equally, I wouldn't want them to lose that focus on their beautifully complex, savoury, toasty Chardonnays at the top end.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. With a bit of snap, crackle and pop.
Definitely.
Those sort of ones. But I think they will keep going with that. I think he's making the more general point that New Zealand can make that fresher, more accessible style as well. You know, and this touches on a point Michael often makes, and it goes to why New Zealand is so good at Chardonnay. Because it's fundamentally cool climate winemaking in New Zealand, you don't need to harvest early to get freshness, which means you have a solid foundation in the wine to then build complexity on top of.
Including snap, crackle and pop.
Including snap, crackle
and pop. I can't even say it. Snap, crackle and pop.
It's a hard one to say. And you know, not just that, though. The lees, roundness. You know, it also means you can do malolactic fermentation to further increase flavour and textural complexity, I guess, without hollowing out the freshness in the wine. You know, and he says this is why warmer regions struggle with Chardonnay. You know, they might be able to build complexity into the wine, but because they've harvested early to keep freshness, the wines tend to have a sort of leaner or skinnier palate structure, if you like. And the acid can then also be lower because the malolactic fermentation has reduced it even further, if you see what I mean.
All makes perfect sense. I think, you know, what I'd like to say, though, is I just think it's really admirable the way Qumu has focused on fine-tuning their Chardonnay over the years. It's clearly taken a while, as do most good things in wine. And they haven't been afraid of pursuing their own vision of what good Chardonnay should be.
Yeah.
And they've steadily built a very loyal following by doing that.
Yeah, and I think they've lost some people along the way as well, who liked the previous stars, but they've gone for what they believe
in. Fair enough. Mm. So it shows that commitment and persistence can pay off. Mm. And that's been hugely valuable for New Zealand Chardonnay in general.
Yeah, absolutely. They're real pioneers. Anyway, coming up, we hear Master Sommelier Cam Douglas's take on New Zealand Chardonnay, plus we slake our thirst on some very tasty bottles. To recap so far, Chardonnay is becoming a real forte for New Zealand alongside Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir. It's evolved rapidly in recent years to beat Burgundy at its own game and looks set to have a very bright future.
If only more people were aware. Mm. On which note, it's time to hear from Master Sommelier Cameron Douglas, who obviously sees and tastes wines from all around the world, but takes a particular interest in New Zealand Chardonnay as selector for the Hawke's Bay Chardonnay Challenge. I asked him how New Zealand Chardonnay has evolved over time.
I think New Zealand Chardonnay went through an era of probably 20-odd years, to be honest, of decidedly average wine because they were having to follow a formula that was based on popularity. And that formula or that popularity was styles that were full-bodied, too much oak. Everything was malolactic to the maximum. So these bold, buttery, boring wines led to the anything but Chardonnay reaction. But even then, sort of hovering in the background, there were the producers who were bespoke in size. And New Zealand really is a bespoke sort of vineyard-driven nation that were using the opportunity to experiment at the same time. And so they were gradually and progressively reducing the use of new oak. And so we're getting styles that have a lot more energy and power, more flintiness, more minerality, and ultimately more Burgundian, I think, might be a loosely used term, more Burgundian in style. I have been quoted, and I did say this, that I said, I'm just going to come out and say it, New Zealand Chardonnay can outclass wines from Burgundy, white wines from Burgundy, and that is because we can produce more consistent styles of Chardonnay consistently through a different range of styles and price point. And I still stand by that statement. I think that we have already shown that we can do Grand Cru level of Burgundy in New Zealand. And I feel that that's been proven several times over with blind tastings in the UK and Europe. You know, there is the classic Cumia River tasting. The judges at that tasting, or the tasters there, thought that they were tasting Burgundy, and it ended up being New Zealand Chardonnay. But when we have the ability to produce Chardonnay consistently at that higher level, that puts us, I think, on at least on a par with great Burgundy for a much better price. In other words, our wines are too cheap as well.
And, I mean, you're a sommelier. If you were going to try and get it on your program and sell it to your customer, what food or dish would you serve with a good New Zealand Chardonnay? Maybe, you know, a couple of examples of your kind of favourite matches. What do they work well with?
Well, we're certainly well known for our salmon, I have to say. Our farmed salmon is very different from the Atlantic salmon style in the Northern Hemisphere. It is brighter, oilier and richer. And because of that, the more fuller bodied styles of Chardonnay that we produce here are a wonderful match. Our lobster, so long as you don't overcook lobster and you have some nice sort of butter sauce with that, is a great match with our Chardonnay. But at the same time, our clam risottos that we do very well down here are fabulous matches with New Zealand Chardonnay.
I think I'm on the next plane.
And I think it's that mineral. I think it's that fresh seafood mineral saline kind of character that seafood has that really works well with our Chardonnay. And I didn't mention it before, but what I've noticed, especially from Hawke's Bay Chardonnay and a little bit in Central Otago Chardonnay, is that salinity, that saltiness, that little lick of saltiness right on the finish of those wines is growing as part of the category of New Zealand Chardonnay. And it really does add that different dimension where I think some Burgundies have lost that.
So you get that lovely breadth, the richness, the sort of the depth, but with the beautiful line of salinity, yeah, as well.
So absolutely.
What do you think the future is for New Zealand Chardonnay? Will it always play second fiddle to Sauvignon and Pinot, or could it be more than that?
I have two answers to that. I think New Zealand Chardonnay will probably play second fiddle to Sauvignon Blanc because of you know, the might and power of Sauvignon Blanc versus any other variety that we produce. I selfishly want it to be recognised more and more and more because I know how good it is. I know how well embraced it is. Every time I take samples of Chardonnay away with me, people are going, "Wow, this is fantastic." But it's incumbent upon people who are explorers of the world of wines to actually stretch their imagination around the idea that New Zealand is more than just one variety, and the market, international markets, need to embrace our Chardonnay so we can show the world, yeah, this is how good it is.
Cameron Douglas, thank you so much.
We need to embrace New Zealand Chardonnay. Hell yeah. I'm up for that.
Bear hug there.
He's a bit more bullish than Michael, isn't he? You know, about the comparison with Burgundy. Some fighting talk in there. But, you know, I think the point about it offering good value in the global context is a really fair one, I think.
I agree. I mean, it's not necessarily always cheap, but definitely good value versus the competition at that quality level, absolutely. And one of the points Cameron did make, which we didn't have time to include, was about how diverse in style New Zealand Chardonnays are today. You know, even within Hawke's Bay, you've got so many different terroirs, and then you've got people playing around with different winemaking, from barrel to MLF, as you said, to lees, to different vessels, even skin contact.
Yeah. I suppose that's why he was encouraging us to experiment and sort of be bold in terms of getting our heads around New Zealand Chardonnay, wasn't he? It's not just one thing, it's lots of things, but, you know, exciting for that reason.
Which is a great note to start our tasting on.
There we go.
So we've got a lineup of wines here, haven't we? And we've selected, the details are on the show notes as ever. And the first thing you notice is...
they're all screw cap.
They are indeed, not a cork in sight. easy access, the way we like it, and fresh as a daisy. So we're going to kick off with a great value wine, actually.
Yep.
It's just, it's £8, though sometimes it's actually discounted down to £6.50. And this is at Tesco, and it's the Wairau Cove Chardonnay 2021 from Gisborne. Mm. Now, the reason we like this is because it's so hard to get good Chardonnay at under £10. Mm. You know, often it's either too sickly or too sharp, but this one balances. It balances fresh apple and peach fruit with a lovely, delicate, creamy texture. It's pretty classic Chardonnay and just really good value.
Yeah, and you'd struggle to get that sort of intensity and vitality in a, I don't know, a Macon or a Chablis at this price.
Yeah.
You know, it's far from being the best wine in the world.
No, it's really not the best wine in the world, but you know.
But I think it is a rare example of really good value Chardonnay. You know, it's bright and it's friendly. It's a great shout. I completely agree. It's great to be able to feature something of such good value. Moving to the south, though, we've got the Esk Valley Seabed Chardonnay here, 2019 from Hawke's Bay. Now, this is a very different kettle of fish, isn't it? It's very serious and complex. It's sort of toasty and apple-y with tons of that snap, crackle and pop character. Being super critical, maybe a tiny bit bitter and disjointed on the finish. The alcohol is a bit high, isn't it? 14%. Maybe it was a warm vintage, I don't know. But, you know, lots of wine in the glass
I think, you know, I think probably we would say that of the wines we tasted, anything that was 14% just often, almost always, actually, to be fair,
seemed a tiny bit.
The sweet spot seemed to be 13 to 13.5. Anyway, sending best wishes Esk Valley's way after the cyclone, of course. And just to finish in the North Island, we've got a couple of Michael's wines to recommend from Auckland. Mm. And first up is the Cumu Estate Chardonnay 2021. Now, this is between £28 and £30. It's lovely. It's peachy and nutty, but refreshing and so appealing. Yeah. Very classy, drinkable right now. You know, it's drinking really well. And for what it is, that's very good value.
Yeah, it's not cheap, but I think it is. It's just, it's classy.
Spot on.
Really classy stuff, isn't it?
And then we move up to a Cumu single vineyard wine. It's the Coddington Chardonnay, again, 2021. This is a bit more expensive, £36 to £38. So a sort of a step up in price, but also a step up in quality. And this is seriously good stuff.
Oh, wow.
You know, it is nutty again, but it's mealy and creamy. It's also got a sort of a tension there and a zestiness. And it's just very long and layered.
Yeah.
It's still young, we should say. You know, it's 2021, but this has got a long way to go. It's
exactly
very cultured.
So where the estate is actually quite open and drinking really well now, I think this is impressive, but it will age. It will come into its own.
It will improve.
With
it will
time,
get better,
with time.
Won't
I think it will
with
get
age.
Better, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Cumu has got three single vineyard Chardonnays from Auckland. For me, this one, Coddington, is a bit like their Meursault. It's sort of broad and buttery and lovely. Whereas Hunting Hill is sort of Pouligny Montrachet in style, and Matty's is more sort of Corton Charlemagne and broad. It's just got, they're wonderful, wonderful wines. Do try them if you can. But talking of Burgundy in this context and comparing it with New Zealand Chardonnay, you know, Burgundy, if we're going to be very generalistic, generalized, overgeneralization alert.
We know what you mean.
Burgundy can be quite sort of hedonistic in style, but there's a sort of brightness and vitality, a kind of, I don't know, urgency, for want of a better word, to New Zealand Chardonnays that I think is very New Zealand in character.
And
is that fair enough to say?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it. It's a bit like comparing, if you like, champagne with English sparkling for me. You know, that there's a vibrancy and tension and tanginess to English fizz, whereas champagne is often a bit more sedate, a bit rounder. You know, they're both high quality, but just there's a slightly different emphasis.
Interesting. That's a really interesting way of looking at it. I completely know what you mean, actually, in that context as well. So I think it's a really good comparison. Talking of freshness, let's head to the South Island and Nelson, somewhere we haven't really touched on very much yet, have we? But we should have. You know, it makes lovely.
So we're at the top of the South Island here,
upbeat,
aren't we?
Chardonnay, sometimes very serious Chardonnay too. And we got one of the best Chardonnay producers in Nelson, which is Neudorf. I always want to pronounce it Neudorf, but it's Neudorf, I think.
So do I.
This is their Tiri Tiri Chardonnay 2019. It's £17.50. And it's a brilliant all-rounder, isn't it? It's got tons of fruit, but really lovely fruit, sort of fresh, apple-y, grapefruit, kind of peachy fruit. so freshness, but also then you get this lovely nutty, creamy complexity in there as well. It's just so self-assured. It's kind of effortlessly Moorish as a style, and it really showcases that sort of vitality and brightness of New Zealand we're talking about. It's, I don't know, it's just spot on, isn't it? Yeah. And I think good value in the context.
It is, you know, it's a very harmonious wine, I think. Anyway, and to finish off, we've got a couple of bottles from Marlborough. Now, these will really blow the doors off the bus. First up is the Blank Canvas Reed Chardonnay, Reed Vineyard Chardonnay 2021, which is $31.99. Yeah. Now, we talk about snap, crackle and pop, or you do. This is definitely high octane in that sense. It's incredibly complex and layered. And again, we've used this word a lot, but nutty. It's really hard to get away from that with these wines. This is absolutely my kind of wine. If Newdorf is sensible New Zealand, this is most definitely naughty New Zealand. It's a bit crazy, but it's gorgeous. And underneath it all, you have this wonderful kind of grounding acidity that holds it together. Yeah, as you can tell, I think this is sensational.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely a wine destined for our cellar, isn't it? And alongside it, we have the Grey Wacky Chardonnay 2019. This is £34. You know, it's not a dissimilar style. It's got sort of billowing aromas of toasted nuts and fresh curry leaf, sort of roasted lemon as well in terms of fruit, you know, and with that really tangy focus acidity underneath as well, and a really long finish. I mean, my word, gorgeous. You know, these wines aren't for everyone, but they definitely showcase that sort of snap, crackle and pop side of New Zealand.
Another one for our cellar.
They're slightly out there. And, you know, they might suit your taste, they might not, but it's well worth trying to find out. Because if you do, oh my word,
they're terrific, aren't they?
Wonderful.
I think it's important to add, actually, we tried a whole range of New Zealand Chardonnays to come up with these final recommendations, and they were a total joy to taste, weren't they?
Yep.
So varied in style, but all with something compelling to offer. We would have loved to include a whole load more. And now these wines are well worth your time. They're not all cheap, but they do offer great value in the global context. And we'd say the sweet spot is probably around the £15 to £30 mark.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put these and further recommendations on our website, as well as that piece I wrote on Cumi River for Decanter. But it's time now to draw things to a close. By way of brief summary, New Zealand Chardonnay is having a moment, making great value wines all across the style spectrum, and deserves to be better known and celebrated than it is. This creates an opportunity, I guess, for those ahead of the curve to fill our boots.
Indeed it does. And at the same time, we'll be raising a glass to those affected by Cyclone Gabrielle. Our thanks to Michael Brykovich and Cameron Douglas, and of course to New Zealand wine growers. Thanks also, as ever, to you for joining us. Cheers.